Hello and welcome to the Nation Blind Podcast. Our episode title today is Building Bonds.
Happy New Year, Federation.
Yeah.
Happy New Year, Federation of Friends and Family. And we're hoping that 2018 gives us a great opportunity to build family and bonds.
Absolutely.
Bonds. When I hear that, I think of banking bonds, but we're talking about the bonds of relationship building.
Definitely.
Okay, excellent.
Okay, well, that you know, I am Melissa Riccobono, and this is my co-host.
Anil Lewis.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know, it's okay. People might know who you are, but then I'm hoping we'll have a lot of new listeners, so people might
true.
Not.
That's true. Thank you for correcting me.
You're welcome.
We're building bonds.
We are, yeah. In fact.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot that we could talk about around building bonds when it comes to the Federation. We are indeed a Federation family and hope that many of you out there have become active members of this wonderful family. But for this program, we're going to be talking specifically around some of our Braille programs.
Yes, definitely. And also just programs for parents and their young blind children.
Excellent.
Yeah. So do you want to jump right in? Do you want to talk
a little bit
about your new year?
As the executive director of the Journey Initiative, I could talk about lots of programs that we do around bonding with Braille and parents and that kind of thing. You know, people don't want to know about my new year. My new year was kind of lazy. So let's get into the exciting stuff, unless you have something exciting you did for New Year's.
No, not particularly exciting.
All right, welcome to the boring facilitators of the Nation's Blind Podcast. But I'm excited about 2018.
I really did in
2017 start laying the groundwork of making sure that some really positive things happen both professionally and personally for me this year. So I'm looking forward to what 2018 brings.
And me as well, actually. Yeah. It's extremely exciting.
Yeah.
Really nice.
So my life may not be exciting to our listeners, but I think some of the Journey Institute programs will be exciting for many of our listeners. So we in the Federation try to make sure that we provide those integral pieces that are necessary for our youth to grow and for parents of our blind children to really interact with their kids in a way that sets high expectations for them to be successful. One of the ways we do this is through our early intervention programs, because we like to start as early as possible, right? So kids need to be exposed to different learning tools throughout their environment. Unfortunately, many parents don't recognize that that's also true for their blind children. So we provide two really crucial early intervention programs. One is our Braille Reading Pals program, and that allows parents to interact with their blind youth. We send out Braille books. They're twin vision books. So there's Braille on one side and print on the other, and sometimes they're overlaid, the Braille on top of the print. But it allows the parent to read to their blind child and set expectations for them to be literate at a very early age, to get comfortable with the reading medium, Braille, which is going to be instrumental in their growth moving forward. An interesting twist before I elaborate on the program is I, as a blind parent of a sighted child, use those same books to read to my sighted child as a blind parent. So it really flipped, but it's still the expectation was for my son to read and for me to be active in that learning. And we were successful. My son was able to read at age 2.
And, oh, my goodness.
Well, not like the Tale of Two Cities or anything, but, you know, so little bitty sounding out words and phrases for the little bitty books. The first book he ever read independently was Froggy Gets Dressed. And I got a chance to present about that experience at a national convention, I think maybe in 2000 something. What was really cool is we would get the books delivered. And one day I was working on a computer with a friend of mine, and my son Amari came into the room, and he was probably 3 at this time. But he opened the book and started basically reading. And I'm thinking, oh, that's so cute. He's looking at the pictures and making up a story. And then when I got the book and actually realized he was actually reading the words, it blew my mind. It was so crazy. But we want that same experience for the sighted parents, the blind children, to have that same opportunity to engage in their learning, because we know that it's possible.
It is possible. And for blind children particularly, it's great for them to be able to touch the Braille mm-hmm. at a very early age and know that they're going to read with their fingers. Mm-hmm. And just as you would have print books all around your house, it's really important to have Braille books around the house mm-hmm. as well, so that blind children can run their fingers over the words. And even before they're actually reading, you know, they call that pre-reading. So it's knowing that the book starts at the top and goes to the bottom, that the page starts at the top and goes to the bottom, knowing that you run your fingers or, you know, with sighted kids, read with your eyes from left to right. All those are very pre-reading readiness skills that are just as important for blind kids to have in Braille as they are for sighted kids to have in print. So the Braille Reading Pals is a great program. The other fun thing about the Braille Reading Pals, the reason that it's called Braille Reading Pals, is that the child gets a little stuffed animal.
Oh, yes, the plush toy.
Yes, the little plush toy that comes with the first book. And generally, we try as much as we can to match the plush toy with something that's happening in that first book. So maybe if it's a book about, I don't know, Horton, the plush toy might be an elephant because, of course, Horton is an elephant. But that is really to help the child associate something plush and tactile and fun that they can hold and play with while the book's being read. At first, we used to say only let the child play with that pal when you are reading books. I don't know that we're as strict anymore about what we say about that, but it is really cool. They do get a little pal to read with, and what a great program. You know, it's kind of the softer side of Braille, those mm-hmm. bonding moments, those memories. I mean, you will always remember when Amari started reading Froggy Gets Dressed.
Yeah.
For me, it was Brown Bear, What Do You See with Austin. And he loved that book so much that I actually used to have to hide it because I would get so tired of reading it because he wanted to read it over and over and over. And he would always find it. And he would say, "Mommy!" Look, and I'd say, "Oh, wow, where was it?" And then we'd have to read it, you know, again.
And you'd have to find
three
another
or four more times,
place.
And I'd have to find another hiding. Oh, my goodness. But, you know, and he now loves reading.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess we did something right. But it, yeah, I mean, so we always have those. And as blind parents of sighted kids or sighted parents of blind kids, we all need those memories and we all need those positive experiences.
And so the other complement to our early intervention piece is the Early Explorers program. So key to growing up and being competitive as a blind person is literacy, of course, is key. But being able to travel independently is equally as important. So we offer an opportunity for the kids to get these little bitty white canes. So they're not necessarily long white canes. They're little bitty white
canes.
They're
long for the kid, though.
Long for the kids. You're right. That's true. They're the appropriate proportional length to their long white baby canes.
Yes.
And it helps the parents understand how important this tool is as an independent travel aid, and also helps the parents set expectations for their child to be an independent traveler, which I think is really interesting because not growing up as a blind person, acquiring blindness at 25, you know, I was already out in the world. But I've heard stories of some blind adults that did not get access to a cane until they were graduating high school, which I think is just absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
So we make sure that the cane's in the environment, the kid's familiar with this as a tool, so it's not a foreign object that's introduced to them later. And the parent doesn't have to be a certified orientation mobility instructor to make sure that the child can do some basic fundamental things with the cane to make sure that they can travel safely and independently. And that's what we do through our Early Explorers program.
And that's such a great point. Parents are sometimes very intimidated by the travel. They don't want to do anything wrong. And I just tell parents all the time, you are truly your child's first teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're comfortable with the cane, and Early Explorers comes with a great DVD, which talks all about helping your child use the cane. It's not going to be perfect at the first time they put it in their hand, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. Nothing that your child is doing when he or she is a toddler is perfect the first time. You know, they're learning to use a spoon. You wouldn't say, "Oh, I need a special teacher to teach them how to use a spoon the right way." No, you just keep practicing, and eventually they get it. The cane is the same way, and the more the cane is around, you know, maybe at first they just use it to push toys around, but that's okay. They're learning what it can do. It's it's a tool there in their environment. And the more you encourage them, the more parents get their own teaching cane so that they can also be using a cane in a very basic way. And their children can hold their hand or hold onto their cane as they swing it back and forth. And you can find things in the environment, play games, just so many fun things. Again, just time for bonding, time for fun, wonderful experiences with canes and really helping your children move and grow. Yeah. The other really fun thing about both these programs is they come with a monthly newsletter, which is sent out by email. It's called The Bee.
The Bee.
And I'm actually the creator of The Bee each month, and I love creating The Bee. It's one of my favorite things that I do for the National Federation of the Blind, besides this podcast, of course. I'm very lucky. I have a lot of super-duper fun things that I get to do with the National Federation of the Blind every single day. But The Bee is super nice, fun. I hope people are enjoying it. We'd love to hear feedback. If you are a Bee reader, please let us know what you'd like to hear more of or see more of in The Bee. But The Bee is just short little articles, one about Braille, one about what's happening with the National Federation of the Blind, one about travel, and then one that we call A Taste of Honey, which is kind of more the home management cooking type skills that your child needs, and it's
cool.
For kids
subscribe.
Birth through seven.
Oh darn.
Well, that's okay. You know, you can probably
I'm still
at
heart.
You are. Okay. You are. Right. But anyway, it's a fun newsletter. It's fun to write. And again, they're very short. We try to make them simple things that you can do to help your child gain literacy, to help your child gain travel skills, and then to help your child and you gain skills with kitchen type activities, craft activities, that type of thing. Mm-hmm.
I already kind of alluded to how I used the Twin Vision books as a blind parent, and you also did the same when you were using the books with Austin. We're undertaking an initiative to help more and more blind parents kind of benefit from that whole crowdsourcing of information that we've acquired through the years as becoming good parents. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, I actually got a chance to talk with Chris Danielson about that, our blind parent mentoring program. And so, you know, maybe this would be a good time to listen to that segment. What do you think?
Well, I think that's a great idea. You got a chance to interview Chris. And I'm looking
No. Chris interviewed me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you flipped it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, Chris interviewed me because, again, this is another thing that I am very thrilled to be a part of.
That's right.
With the National Federation of the Blind.
You are a blind parent.
I'm coordinating our blind parent initiative. So I'm happy that I'm able to talk to Chris about this.
So let's listen to Chris interview Melissa about blind parents.
This is the Nation's Blind Podcast. I am Chris Danielson, and I am here with
Melissa Riccobono.
Good to be with you, Melissa. How
yeah,
are you?
Great. Haven't been with you for a while, so it's nice to be with you as well.
Yeah, excellent. And we are going to talk about the parent mentoring program.
Yes, it's so exciting. You know, January is mentoring month, which I did not realize, but it is. And so in honor of that, we at the National Federation of the Blind are re-rolling out our parent mentoring program, which is really exciting. We really want to be able to pair blind parents with other blind parents and a mentoring type relationship. So if you are a blind parent and you'd like to be a mentor, or you are someone who is a parent of young children or maybe expecting your first child, or maybe is a parent of older children and kind of had the young child stuff figured out but now are having a few more struggles as your children get older, or you're even just interested in becoming a parent, foster parent, adoptive parent, even if you're a grandparent, we'll take everybody. We use parent very loosely, and so we are looking for you.
So what's the, I mean, you and I probably have a pretty good idea, but just for the benefit of the listeners, and by the way, National Mentoring Month, it's amazing what you learn when you have to research a
yes.
podcast every month.
It is, isn't it?
useful information.
Or
there.
Maybe not so useful.
Right. But in all seriousness, what's the benefit of blind parents being mentored by other blind parents?
Oh, that's a great question. I think that the biggest benefit, at least for me, is figuring out blind-friendly ways to do things. So I have both friends who are blind parents and friends who are sighted parents, and I've gotten great advice from both of them because some things aren't really a blind parent thing. They're just a parent thing. And so it's really nice to get all types of perspectives. The things that are more blind parent related are travel. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, a blind parent can't push a stroller safely and use a cane or use a dog. So how are we going to navigate that? What strollers are best to pull behind us? Are there other options? What kind of baby carriers are best? What kind of car seats are lightest? Since we don't have a car, generally, that we can just leave a car seat in, how do we not break our back when we're trying to carry a baby and a car seat and a diaper bag and everything else that we're trying to lug around? How do we measure medication? How do we take our child's temperature? What are the best talking thermometers out there? All those little questions that generally are fairly easily answered by people that are doing it or who have done it before, those are the kinds of questions that are really helpful to have from a blind person. The other thing is having someone to talk to about those very specific kind of blindness moments where you're at the playground and someone makes a comment about, oh, you do very well for a blind person. Or, I don't know, a child's friend's parent doesn't want the child to come play at your house. And you're kind of wondering if that's a blindness thing or if that's just them as a parent thing. It's really nice to sort of have somebody else to talk to who's been through it, who can give you advice, and who can just sometimes say to you, you're doing okay. This is okay. And even just general parenting advice of this too shall pass. Your child will not be in diapers when they graduate from high school. You will get them potty trained, you know. And again, that falls into more the parenting thing. But I think we all need all of those things. We all need the blindness stuff. We all need the parenting stuff. We all need that kind of support. And incidentally, you know, I think a lot of times we think of moms needing this support, and moms do. Dads need it too. So to all you dads out there, please don't be shy to sign up to be a mentor. And also, please don't be shy to sign up to be a mentee, because we need dads too.
Well, you know, that's really important to mention that, because I was just thinking too, having not been a parent yet, you know, there's a lot to think about that I didn't even really process. I, you know, you were mentioning several things, and I was like, oh yeah, that would be a thing to think about. So just having if you're preparing to be a parent,
yes,
just having somebody to talk to and say, okay, what kind of things do I need to do to get prepared? What kind of stuff am I not expecting that I need to think about in order to prepare for this experience? And what can I do to get prepared ahead of it? You know, what kind of skills can I be working on? Maybe, you know, how do you deal with your kids' reactions to blindness, mm-hmm, once they realize that that's a thing, and other people's reactions to your blindness and how your kids are going to process that? You know, that's really important as well.
It is super important. And it's super important to have that check sometimes. You know, sometimes the easiest thing is to just kind of blame blindness, like, it's kind of your, you know, well, of course, it's because I'm blind. And then you talk to other parents and you think, oh, maybe it's not. Or, oh, my gosh, other parents have these issues, too. So it's just good all the way around.
Absolutely.
Kind of get out of your own head sometimes, which is really helpful.
Right.
My head can be a little scary sometimes. So I like to get out of it.
Yeah, mine too. You know, you're always in your own head. You're always imagining the worst,
yes,
case scenario, you know.
Yes.
And sometimes you do. My dad used to say, this too shall pass,
yes,
son, to me all the time.
Yes,
so,
that's right.
You know, you always have to remember that. So how can people become a mentor or find a mentor?
There is a very easy online form to fill out. The link is in the show notes, but I'm sure you can find it by going to blindparents.org, and it's right there on the homepage. And we're just excited to have as many people as possible. I got one filled out form already, so thank you very much to that person. And hopefully,
there we go,
by the time this podcast is being heard, there'll be many more in my inbox. Once you fill out the form, and again, it is. We try to keep it as easy as possible. There's just a couple questions to answer. Of course, your contact information, and then whether you want to be a mentor or a mentee, and then just telling a little bit about yourself, so that we can match you with the best person. Please be patient, because, of course, we need to build our database. So we're going to try to match people as quickly as we can. But if we don't match somebody with you right away, know that we're working on it. And in fact, once you do fill out the form, someone from the National Federation of the Blind Parent Initiative will be contacting you within a couple of business days, just to make sure that you know we received your email, to ask you any other follow-up questions we might need to ask you, that type of thing. So it's pretty easy. Also, I know that we had kind of a soft rollout of this program I don't know, maybe a year ago or so.
Yeah, I think that's right. We were mentioning it in some of the materials.
We were. And people did sign up, and we have a lot of mentors. I'm sorry to have you do this, but this form really is the best way that we can keep track of mentors and mentees. So if you wouldn't mind just filling it out again, it should take you, you know, no more than 15 minutes at the very most. And we would just really appreciate having as many people as possible fill out the form. Not that if you forget, you know, we won't be contacting you, because we do still have all of that information. But this is just such a better way to have it all in one place, and hopefully to really help us do some matching pretty easily. So
yeah, it's you know, filling in a form, what that does is it gives us all the I always tell people this too. We don't just do forms to make people's lives miserable.
Exactly.
Because, what it does is it allows us to categorize and put things in databases better, so that we can more easily do the job of. So, you know, just give that 10 or 15 minutes to get the form filled out, and you'll find that you'll have a much better experience, probably a much better match. And, you know, again, we'll take all comers, but it's helpful to fill out the form. I'm always telling people this stuff, too. We don't put forms on the website for our health.
That's right.
So... That's right. Well, thank you so much. This is exciting, and I know I don't have a child in my life coming that I know of, but
well, I hope you would know.
Yeah, exactly. But I can see how this will be valuable to people who are already parents, and people like me who hopefully someday will be preparing to become parents. So this is a terrific thing, and it's been a pleasure to talk to you about it.
Thank you so much.
And we're back. So Chris Danielson doesn't have any kids that he knows about.
That he knows.
Getting a little risque on the Nation's Blind podcast here.
All right.
Christopher Danielson. We should scare him and send him a letter.
Oh, goodness. That's just too mean.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry. Like I said, I'm seven at heart. really interesting interview. I'm really glad that we're really emphasizing this, because I'm going to tell you, without getting into the details of how I ended up becoming a single father after the divorce, fought to become the single father, to get custody of Amari, and then got it. And that was probably more scary than thinking I would lose him. You know, because I'm thinking, okay, now I'm responsible for this little bitty boy's future.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, I do a fair to middling job of keeping myself together. But through that inspiration of that one recognition that I am totally responsible for his well-being, and through the inspiration of wanting to do it well, I was able to tap into the resource of so many of my Federation family members that were, in my opinion, really good parents. And it was interesting. Well, the epiphany was, one, I learned to do things, of course, in a non-visual fashion that I had kind of grown up doing visually. But what was interesting was, it wasn't as difficult as I thought it was going to be. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does.
I was thinking, this is going to be so challenging. I'm going to have to reinvent everything.
Mm-hmm.
But just the simple little strategies that my friends shared with me on doing things made it, well, as far as parenting can be easy, made it fairly easy.
And you shouldn't have to reinvent the wheel. That's the biggest thing. And you should have answers for your family, for your friends, for yourself. You know, how am I going to do this? How am I going to do that? And there's no right or wrong way, but just having somebody to talk to so you're not constantly reinventing that wheel is really important. And that's really what we want to do with the Blind Parent Mentoring Program. So we hope that a lot of people will fill out the form, and we're just excited about re-rolling it out, because it was rolled out in a little less formal way. Now it's a more formal way, just in time, again, for National Mentoring Month, which I can't say enough about, because I didn't even know there was a National Mentoring Month. So it just makes me smile. There's a month for everything, I guess, or a day for everything. So.
Yeah. The hardest part for me was just convincing all of the sighted people around me that I was competent, because they, and I can't be mad at them, because I had the same fears, right?
Sure.
But well, when they were expressing it was just so bizarre.
And you know what? That's the thing that gets me every time. I don't think there is a parent, blind or sighted, who has not been afraid for mm-hmm. a variety of reasons, mm-hmm. because being a parent is scary. I will never forget coming home from the hospital with little baby Austin, unlocking our door, and this feeling of, oh my goodness, mm-hmm. here we are with this tiny little child, and it's just us. Yeah. We don't, you know, we're not in the hospital anymore. There's no nurses. There's no, you know, we didn't even have family close by, though my mom was on her way, but she didn't come for the next couple of weeks because mm-hmm. Austin was born a little earlier than we thought he was going to be. And then just thinking, okay, but I'm not by myself.
Yeah.
You know, I have my husband and I have other parents who have done this. And, you know, mm-hmm. this is going to be okay. But it was a very, I think probably very similar to your moment of getting yeah. that custody and all of a sudden like, oh my gosh, this is real.
Yeah.
That was sort of my moment of, oh my gosh, this is real. And I don't know a parent that hasn't had one of those.
Certainly. I love reflecting back on the times where I blow the minds of the sighted people that are around me. I remember sitting in the den with some friends just hanging out. And Amari came through the kitchen and I yelled at him, boy, tie your shoes up. And they were, wow, he's magic. How does he know? And they're looking, his shoes are untied. How do you know?
Wow, it's amazing.
Like they were the little plastic tips on those shoestring
yep.
ends like, against that little. Yeah, it's just so funny that they thought I had some magic presence. But no, it's just paying attention. So that's the key, learning those non-visual ways of being a good parent. And that made it fun.
Yeah,
you know, blowing the minds of all my sighted friends to make me think. But this is my favorite moment with Amari, because the part, and I may have shared this on the podcast before, but the part that's difficult also is walking around in the public and people not recognizing that I'm the parent. You know, this little bitty boy, he's 5 or 6 years old at the time. By now, we're walking around and he's looking around. And all of a sudden, I feel like, you know, he's kind of going into a shell. Man, what's going on? What's wrong? He's like, everybody's just staring at us. Mm-hmm. You know, and he's like, okay, he's feeling uncomfortable. He's got this blind dad, and I got to do something about this. So, you know, I could have, you know, got angry at the people that were staring. But what I did is I kneeled down and said, man, I just got to let you know, with a daddy this good looking, people are going to stare. And he smiled. And, you know, now from that point on, every time we're walking around, I could tell when people were staring at us because they're a little chuckle, a little giggle. Yeah, but just finding those alternative ways of dealing with that and, you know, making sure that he recognizes that his dad, you know, it's just like any other dad, just can't see.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Well, I think you got to talk to President Riccobono about this as well and yeah. our support for blind children and their parents and also for blind parents.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And he shares a little bit about his strategies, too, in dealing with some of the public perceptions of blind parents. So, you know, I got him to come out of his shell a little bit.
Great.
Want to take a listen?
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right. We're going to take a listen to The Presidential Privilege, and it's my privilege. You're listening to The Nation's Blind Podcast. All right, this is Anil Lewis, and you're listening to The Nation's Blind Podcast, and it's time for The Presidential Privilege. I'm seated here with President Mark Riccobono, President of the National Federation of the Blind. Welcome, sir.
Happy New Year. It's a privilege to be here in 2018.
I think so. As I've been saying throughout, I'm looking forward to 2018 being a blast. So our goal in the time we have allocated to us, we're going to be talking about supporting blind parents and parents of blind children. Melissa and I talked a little bit about it and really want to, one, get your perspective on the organizational priority, but then also maybe drill down a little bit about your personal commitment to these kind of parallel initiatives.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Sounds great.
So you want to tell us a little bit about how the National Federation of the Blind, especially in 2018, is planning on supporting blind parents and parents of blind children?
Well, you know, that is a kind of a strategic priority for us this year. And I guess in many years, it's a strategic priority. And you mm-hmm. say, well, why parents? Well, a couple of reasons. Of course, if we're talking about parents of blind children, it's really important because we know that parents are a child's first teacher. And unfortunately, in the blindness field, maybe other areas as well, so often when you're dealing with something like blindness, the trajectory is to convince parents that the professionals really know more about the kids than the parents do.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, as parents, you're with your children many more hours of the day. You know them at a different level. You actually know more about their capacity than anybody else. And if we can empower parents to really understand blindness in an authentic way, then they have the best chance of helping their children live a full, productive life. And part of that is getting them to know blind adults and getting them to set high expectations based on meeting successful blind adults. With blind parents, it's very similar.
Before you move into that,
Melissa
and I spoke earlier about our early intervention programs, the Braille Reading Pals and Early Explorers, but I'd really like you to elaborate because I think we did not do it justice when we talked about that other key is, especially when you're talking about parents of blind children, getting them exposed to successful blind adults.
Yeah.
How do you see that impacting the future? I know you said setting high expectations, but delve down a little bit.
Yeah, well, again, if what you're relying on is someone who's a professional, and don't get me wrong, we have great professionals in the National Federation of the Blind. We have a number of individuals who they see this organization as their professional network, and that's part of what makes them successful. But in the traditional model, you have a professional who is likely sighted, and it's not that they're sighted that gives them a perspective. It's that they're sort of traditionally trained in a model that says, you know, they're there to help sort of mitigate blindness and, you know, it's the
sort of
training where they're taught that, you know, if you have a blind child, they're going to be delayed. That's kind of the basic expectation. So you have a parent that comes along, and I guess take my parents, for example. They had no experience with blindness. They had to rely on the professionals to help set the pace for them of what to expect. Well, you know, depending on how many blind adults that professional has real experience with, that's going to color what their expectations are. So we want parents to get to know as many blind adults as possible, not just what Mark Riccobono's experiences or Anil Lewis, but hundreds of blind people, because, of course, that's how you start to create a normed understanding of that blindness is a characteristic, that blind people have different capacities, that blind people achieve different levels because of the opportunities that they've had. If you meet 100 blind people and you meet some that have gone to our centers and you meet others who have tried to get the same skills over a period of years and you meet others that have gone to rehabilitation programs 10 and 12 different times, which all of us know people that fit all of those categories, you start to kind of understand where the commonalities are and where some of the differences are. And that really helps you raise your expectations.
In a real way.
In a real way and know how to operationalize that and also have people to call upon. You know, for all of us as parents, you know, it's that moment when your child comes and says, you know, I really would like to go do whatever, ballet. Now, I have no clue about ballet. I know what it is. I've never worn a tutu, but, you know, but you got to make a decision, right? You want to learn about it as a parent. It may be even something that you've completely failed at, you know, but you don't want to limit your child from having those opportunities. Right. So the Federation gives you a network to say, okay, well, let me call Deja Powell. I know she's a blind person. She talks to blind people about dancing. I don't know that she knows ballet. Maybe she does. And Deja's going to say, ah, you know, I don't do ballet, but here, let me connect you with so-and-so. And but also, let me give you some of the generalities of what I would do. And then you call the next person and you get networked into someone who, here's a blind person that actually does ballet or teaches ballet or whatever it is. So it's that really that informal piece of being able to work the network that's really important.
And I'm sorry I missed your transition into talking about blind
parents. That's okay. So, you know, with blind parents, it's different in that in a real fundamental way, we're involved with blind parents because parenting is a fundamental right. Aren't many qualifications to be a parent. And, you know, we could talk philosophically about whether there should be more, but of course, there really aren't many. There are some basic things that parents are expected to be able to do in order to have custody of their children. But oftentimes with blind people, the standard is higher. And it's based on a misunderstanding of blindness and the capacity of blind people. And that's just not fair. It also really doesn't look at how important it is that you have a parent that is loving and supportive and is really dedicated to raising a child. So the fact that we're involved with blind parents is really about basic fundamental rights to parent, to make that commitment, to have a loving bond to a child, to raise a child, and all that comes with it.
Yeah.
Now, there's all the other things around it.
We talked a little earlier about the fear that comes, and we shared a little bit. But Melissa said very, very powerfully, you know, that's kind of across the board for a parent, period. It's not a blind parent experience.
Right, and really that understanding. You know, as blind people, we're talked into things all the time, and we're taught to think that it's because we're blind.
Right.
Our initiative helps to, again, connect blind people with blind parents so they understand, look, this has nothing to do with blindness. This mm-hmm. is parenting.
Mm-hmm.
You get this living thing and you take it home and it's, you know, suddenly it's not a doll, you know. You can break it.
That's how guys talk about this living thing and you bring it home. That's how we talk about
it. You can break it. But on the other hand, it's a little more durable than you. I mean, and you just do certain things. So I thought I was doing something sensible. My son, Austin, was a couple months old, and I had him laying on the desk next to me at home, and he was fine. I was reaching over every now and then, and he wasn't moving much anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, in the instance that I was just about to reach over and check on him, he rolled right off the desk. Now, I know you're going to ask a question about why would you have him on a desk anyway? But anyway.
I wasn't going to ask.
And
but I'm sure our listeners will.
Well, you know, there all sorts of things parents do you probably don't talk about.
Yeah.
But he was fine. It was more traumatic for me, I think, than him.
Yeah.
But you also realize that could have happened to anybody.
Yeah.
You put your child down just for an instant, and it really was. I was not distracted. I was trying to take care of something, and I was trying to be very diligent about checking on him now and then. But of course, just in that second,
mm-hmm.
it happened, and you know, it made me change my behavior. It also made me recognize that they're fragile, no doubt about that. But you know, they're more resilient sometimes than we think. But that's a whole process. Now, of course, the techniques that I use are different. And how do you know what techniques to use? Well, you know, I was fortunate, Melissa and I, to have known blind parents. Of course, my brother and sister-in-law are blind, so they have done it. Mm-hmm. We know other members of the Federation who have done it. But a lot of people don't have the experience. They don't know another blind parent. So they have to think up the techniques, and sometimes they're bad techniques.
Yeah, especially if they have their sighted friends try to help them, and they have no knowledge of really non-visual access skills, and they're trying to teach the blind person how to do things sighted.
Yes.
You know, it was so funny. My big medal of honor as a dad I got was I was able to change that diaper like that, you know, and his mom, you know, Mari's mom would get so angry because, you know, when he'd wake up in the middle of the night with a wet diaper, I was able to go in there, boom, 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 and it's over. She had to go in, turn the lights on, and once the lights are on, now he's engaged, right? Now he wants to play and everything. So she used to get so angry, you know, that she couldn't just get in there and do it. So it's just a matter of doing things properly, of course, but using different techniques.
Yeah, I had a perfect diaper changing record for a while. You can't maintain it, though.
No. No, there's no such thing as a perfect diaper changing record, but we're not going to go down that path.
I think Grandma was surprised. I had that with our son in there.
Oh, the ability to change the diapers, really?
Well, not the ability, but just I had the gold standard for leak-proof diapers for a while.
Oh, look at that.
I'm very proud of that.
We'll start that as a competition.
You got to get the corners right.
There you go. That's true. Got to keep that seal in place. Yeah. And for those out there, the two advices I have as a parent, period, is one, get a diaper genie. They're the greatest. And two, sleep when the baby sleeps. Those
there
are
you
the two advices I give.
Yeah.
So we talked a little earlier about public perceptions, you know, of our ability to parent as blind parents. So I was hoping that I could get you to disclose a little bit about an instance that you shared with me in the past.
So yeah, there's many instances. And, you know, with your children, you know, it's different as a blind person when you're out in public. And, of course, we try to teach people that, blind people, that you have to learn to deal with the public in a way that is constructive. And that's hard to do because sometimes, you know, you're just tired of it, frankly.
Yeah.
Being harassed about this and that or whatever
having
it is.
Low expectations superimposed on you, having them say, now you take care of your dad.
Yeah, well, and certainly with the kids, that's really something because, you know, you run into people all the time who, people say, well, it's very nice that they take care of you. This happened to us in church the other day. And I always try to say, you know, Elizabeth's five, so really she expects me to take care of her and try to do it in a light way. But it's difficult because then people's feelings get hurt. But sometimes, you know, when things are just out in public, you kind of react in a way that you want your kids to get the message that this is not appropriate, this is not normal. And I remember a time, sticking with the church theme, it wasn't in church, but it was just out on the street walking around. And, you know, you walk by people and they just say things without really even knowing who you are or that sort of thing and walking along. And a guy on the street who sees me with the long white cane and the kids, and he says, I wish I was Jesus. Of course, many of us have had the experience of, you know, someone wanting to heal our blindness. And so I can deal with that. But what message do you want the kids to get from that? And so I don't know why I said this, but, you know, I just said, well, don't we all? And just kept walking.
I just think that's a classic response. I would not have thought about doing that for anything, but that is the right and proper response, much better than what I would have done.
Well, I'm sure I've said the wrong thing sometimes.
Don't we all? Classic.
I mean, you know, I had a similar experience in college where someone ran up and said, did you hear the good news? And I thought, well, the Badgers won the game last night or something. Of course, they were trying to heal me that time, too.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, how do you...
Oh, that good news. Wow.
How do you deal with these things, and especially with your children, because you don't want your children to start to have the anxiety that they have to take care of you.
Yeah.
And so doing it in a developmental way. Now, my son, Austin, is sighted, and I invite him to help me read stuff all the time. I try to be careful about it, and in fact, sometimes I pay him for it. Now, there's a basic level of, you know, hey, you're part of the family.
And this
you should
is
help
responsibility,
with some things. But,
but,
you know, we've been switching banks lately, and I feel like, God, I've been asking him to, you know, read a lot of little rinky-dink things lately. So I tried to reward that, knowing that that's not his job. Right. I mean, he's going above and beyond what we should expect. But the cool thing is there's also an opportunity, and I think this is one of the things where our mentoring of blind parents is important. There's a great opportunity there to start to engage your kids in reading.
Yep.
So get helping your kids read stuff, not just for you, but to help develop their reading is really significant. Now,
there you go. And when he becomes a bank president, he'll have you to thank for.
There you go. That's right. That's right. So these areas are important at a fundamental level. They're core to what we do. But at a rights, human civil rights organization, they're really important. Even for our members who are not parents or grandparents, if a blind person, if we permit a blind person to have a child taken away simply on the basis of blindness, and we're not saying every blind parent is a good parent because we're not arguing that every parent is
a good
parent.
Yeah.
But on the basis of blindness, where circumstances without blindness, you know, the child would not have been taken away or the parent would not be harassed, blind parents should get the same rights, opportunities, and ability to be who they are and have the choice of parenting in the way that they choose. And we shouldn't decide that from the beginning, blindness is something that is detrimental to a child. And we want parents of blind children to have that same message about their blind child. You know, let them go climb the tree and do all the crazy stuff that we didn't tell our parents we did, you know.
Yeah.
So that's why that is a priority, and it's one of the more fun areas we get into because we get into interesting conversations. The beauty of it is we all survived it because we were kids once.
And durable.
And our parents survived it, sometimes tolerating us, sometimes are surviving the mistakes that they made. But when we all work together and we share the information we have, hopefully every generation is better for it. And that's the beauty of what we do in our organization.
Amen. And that's one of the things I'm looking forward to in 2018, to support blind parents and support parents of blind children. It's definitely been a privilege to talk to you, President Riccobono.
Thank you very much. And let's go change some diapers. Oh, no, we're past that. Thank Amen. Goodness.
Thank you. You're listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast.
Well, that was a great privilege. You know,
yes, it was a great privilege.
Yes.
You know, nothing like two blind fathers sitting
That's
around.
That's right. Talking know, about
chewing
the kiddos.
Fat. Yeah.
That's right. And all the work that we do in the National Federation of the Blind.
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
They're
yeah,
good.
That.
They're good conversations to have. Absolutely. Yeah. We have a little bit of a new segment that we're putting together. This is where we are going to have feedback from our Federation family and those that are listening to the podcast. We're going to call it Members Voices. Oh. And so I'm going to actually read some tweets that we received around World Braille Day.
Members'
and
voices, but they're tweets? Oh, I thought we were going to hear
tweets.
Their voices.
Well,
okay.
Sorry, but their voices are through the tweets. But
okay,
hopefully maybe
it.
Someday we can actually have voices. We'll talk about that. We're also going to, so stay tuned, we're going to be giving all of you a question to answer so that you can tweet us or call us and have us hear your voices. And then we'll be sharing those on our next month's podcast. So
awesome.
Yeah. So the first tweet that I want to read is at NFB Voice. And we said, when asked why they don't teach Braille, many teachers and counselors believe it to be unnecessary due to technological advances and too difficult to learn. But we know, # Braille is beautiful.
Wow.
Yeah.
First part of that is, what a shame, because that is true.
Oh, it's
and when the teachers are promoting it, I mean, the students believe it and the parents have no other recourse than to believe the quote-unquote professionals. Luckily, all teachers don't believe that.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right, definitely. So at Chris Reagan says...
Well, before,
oh,
I mean,
sorry, go ahead.
Drilling down that, just to show how ridiculous that is, I would tell the story about, you know, if technology is the answer, back when I was using technology, reading books on tape...
Oh, God.
You know, listening.
What poor technology,
yeah.
Really?
Well, I mean, that's where
but that
it was.
What you had. No, I agree.
But you listen to the book, it's chapter one, you know, and the next thing you know, you know, it wasn't active. It wasn't an active experience. And it doesn't happen. You don't learn through osmosis just because the tape is playing. And even the technology today, I mean, it does allow us to access the information in a more dynamic fashion. But putting the Braille underneath my fingers definitely helps my retention. And then, of course, no matter how you're listening to the information, you're never going to know where the commas are. You're not going to learn about grammar, punctuation, spelling. You know, I know that that's probably not as important today because everybody's on social media not giving any consideration to it. But
I would argue it's still very
there's still a professional
important.
World out there.
Yes.
Yeah, you're not going to get paid from tweeting. You know,
not generally. There might
no.
be some job out
yeah,
there, some
yeah.
little niche you can carve for yourself.
So technology is a great equalizer, but Braille is really the foundational support that makes it possible for people to be competitive.
Well, and here's the deal, and this tweet kind of speaks to this a little bit. So, at Chris Reagan says, yes, but they do have the right to use what they can afford. Brailing books and other materials is getting too expensive in today's educational system when money counts. And I would just argue that technology really, why does it have to be an either or?
Mm-hmm.
Technology makes Braille more available than
and
ever
affordable.
Before and
affordable.
I mean, so, okay, the cost of Braille displays, that is an issue. I get it. But if a school system spends, I don't know, $3,000 on a really good Braille display for somebody, then all those electronic files and books are getting more and more electronic anyway for all kids. So assuming those files are made accessible, which of course is a pretty dangerous assumption sometimes, and that's kind of beyond the scope of what we're talking about. But in a perfect world, that Braille display, that money spent for that Braille display, yes, it's a big amount initially, mm-hmm. but really it's going to provide a tool that that child can use throughout their education and really cut down the cost. We're not talking right. so much about needing the hard copy Braille, although I would argue that there's a place for that as I'm sitting here reading these tweets in hard copy Braille under my fingers.
And the digitization makes it easy to Braille those pieces that are specific. And I think it's unfair to say that it costs more for that blind student because you're not taking into consideration all the other costs that are spent on the sighted students. I mean, how much money do school systems, colleges, even K through 12, spend on developing an actual physical library collection? Mm-hmm. You know, the blind student's not going to access that material. So whatever, you know, they spend on that, then you should divide that based on the students in the classrooms. And then I bet that you would end up seeing that the school system's spending more per capita on their sighted students for their instructional materials than they are for the assistive technology that the blind student can use.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting point about the library. I never thought about that.
Mm-hmm. I had learned that from a friend of mine who's a wheelchair user, and he would go into his presentations. He'll say, well, you guys complain about me being expensive, but I brought my own chair.
So, really, well, it's kind of like President Riccobono saying that, you know, the biggest expense, the biggest accommodation yes. that we use here in this building
are the lights
for
exactly.
the sighted people.
Exactly.
And it's really expensive.
And you should take that into consideration in the school system. How much are the lights? They're for the sighted students. So if you think you're spending more on blind students, I disagree.
That's true. @blind_fury says to us, I agree, beautiful, but antiquated. And
yeah.
I disagree with that.
What's interesting with this, of course, these are individuals that are communicating us through a technical medium, right? And they're probably going to be more prone to think that the solutions they're using are the ones that are sufficient. But I still, based on when I actually read the tweets in Braille, the misspellings, and it's crazy. Luckily, there's voice dictation because I think some people are using the voice dictation and at least they're able to pronounce the words. But if they were ever challenged to spell them, they'll be problematic. So it's not antiquated. It is still functional. It's just like anything else. In instances where a person used to have to use a Smith Corona typewriter, mm-hmm. the technology has made it possible for them to do dynamic word processing using Microsoft Word. So has there been evolution in the way that we can do things? Absolutely. But has there been an elimination of those fundamental tools? No. I mean, as long as people are still using paper and pen, you know, we should still recognize that Braille has its degree of functionality.
Absolutely. And it kind of gets that nice transition to @soundshadow87. I cry BS. That would be the same thing as not teaching sighted kids to read print because of technology.
Amen.
So I'm with you. I'm totally with you.
Is that a hashtag?
You.
Do I hashtag amen? No, I'm going to go old school. Hashtag right on.
That's right. So, but you know, there's also, you know, another side, and you know, there were some tweets asking us at the NFB why it is that then we are not working harder to develop affordable Braille displays, affordable technology to use with Braille.
And oh, shame on us.
We actually are, though. We are part of the Transforming Braille group. We
yes.
were integral in the testing and the development of the Orbit Reader. Now,
yes.
it is really unfortunate. I mean, that's a Braille display that's going to be, once it's made, it's supposed to be $500 or a little less.
Mm-hmm.
We also are working on funding for the library, you know, making sure that the Library for the Blind is able to give those units to patrons. Now, we realize the Orbit Reader is having some difficulties with
right.
production. You know, unfortunately, that's not something that we have control over.
But one of the things we have to acknowledge, though, okay, so the Orbit Reader is not the only affordable refreshable Braille technology that's under development.
That's
so
right.
we can take credit
yeah.
with respect to at least establishing it as a market-driven item.
Yes.
And there's another Braille display out there called the Knut. I think it's like either 15 or 20 line refreshable Braille display that you can get on one.
Oh my gosh.
It's amazing. And the price point on that, I think they were saying, would be like $1,000. Still kind of expensive, but can you imagine getting a whole Braille page that's refreshable? I mean, so
amazing.
I think that the technology is going to be the solution. It's just like with everything else. The technology we need evolves at a much slower rate because we're a smaller population
yeah.
and we can't be driven by a profit margin, but it is coming. And I do believe that with the convergence of everything digital, that having a refreshable Braille display will be kind of a standard as we move forward because it will be affordable.
Yeah, I agree. So those are some of the tweets that we received, and we're hoping to receive some tweets for you, the hashtag for this answer to this question is number Nations Blind Podcast. And so we are looking for you to tweet us at NFB_voice. We want you to share initiatives, innovations, and individuals that are a positive force in the lives of blind people.
Initiatives? What's the second thing?
Initiatives.
See, I need a Braille copy of that.
It's a three eyes.
Yeah.
So we're the three-eyed monster.
Okay.
Initiatives.
Innovation.
And individuals. That are a positive force in the lives of blind people.
Awesome.
So please tweet us at NFB_voice.
Using the hashtag
number Nations Blind Podcast. And also, you can like us on Facebook. You could certainly use the number hashtag, the Nations Blind Podcast hashtag. You can also email us, podcast@nfb.org.
You could give a phone call.
Yeah, we would love that, because if this is members' voices, we do want to hear your voices. 410-659-9314, extension 2444, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
See, I know the old school ways. I can pick up a phone. I always get confused with the hashtag Twitter stuff. Yeah, people think I'm a prolific social media presence. And I'm not. I just accept all the friends and, you know, that kind of thing. And so they think, wow, he has all these friends. Well, I never say no.
Well, there you go. You can follow at Anna Life and, you know, he'll.
Yeah, my Twitter account.
That's his Twitter account. Well, it's been wonderful talking with you today about all of the initiatives that we have to help people bond together in the National Federation of the Blind.
What a great start for 2018.
Yes. Yes, it is. Anil, I sort of teased that I would talk a little bit about my initiative.
Mm-hmm.
Should I reveal at this point?
I don't see why not.
So my initiative actually
drum roll, please.
Also to help people bond in 2018. I am going to be doing events to help people connect with each other through music. And my hope is that they will be able to use these events to raise money for charities of their choice. So my first event is going to be in March here at the Jernigan Institute, and I will be making money, I hope, for the National Federation of the Blind, NFB, Braille Literacy and Learning, Enrichment for Literacy and Learning.
The Bell Program.
The NFB Bell Academy for Maryland.
Excellent.
So the organization itself is going to be called Present, because you need to be present in order to connect.
And, oh, I thought present like it's a gift.
Well, it is a present. Did you know there's a difference between present and gift? A present is something that you actually give to somebody in person.
Okay.
And a gift is something that you receive or that you give, but you don't have to be there personally.
I didn't know that.
So a present, you actually have to be there personally.
That's beautiful.
So that's a little bit about mine. I don't know. Did you have something too that you wanted to
share? Present to receive the present.
That's right.
That's awesome.
That's right.
No, I don't have anything. Remember, I'm the boring guy. Maybe I have something exciting to announce in future podcasts. But right now, I'm just happy that it's 2018. I'm on a trajectory for success this year, and I'm hoping that each and every one of you who are listening are on that same trajectory. We're looking forward to sharing with you, hearing your stories, and living the life you want through our interaction. Speaking of that, remember, you can live the life you want.
Blindness is not what holds you back.